5. A hemlock frosty came in 4 sections. A wide, round base, a slightly smaller snowball that wedged into the base, then a trunk, then the head with the face and hat. Each section could be stuffed into the next larger one so that storage for the other 11 months of the year was not too demanding. At a cost of $82.99 plus shipping, everyone packed away their frosties with care. And they unpacked them with great delight. Throughout the afternoon, sections of frosties could be seen inside most garages along Hemlock as the snowmen were dusted off and checked for parts. Then they were put together, built just like a real snowman, section on top of section, until they were 7 feet tall and ready for the roof. Installation was not a simple matter. A ladder and a rope were required, along with the help of a neighbor. First, the roof had to be scaled with a rope around the waist. Then Frosty, who was made of hard plastic and weighed about 40 pounds, was hoisted up, very carefully so as not to scratch him over the asphalt shingles. When Frosty reached the summit, he was strapped to the chimney with a canvas band that Vic Frohmeyer had invented himself. A 200-watt lamp was screwed into Frosty's innards, and an extension cord was dropped from the back side of the roof. Wes Trogdon was an insurance broker who'd called in sick so he could surprise his kids by having their Frosty up first. He and his wife, Trish, washed their snowman just after lunch. Then, under her close supervision, Wes climbed and grappled and adjusted until the task was complete. 40 feet high, with a splendid view, he looked up and down Hemlock and was quite smug that he had got the jump on everyone, including Frohmeyer. While Trish made hot cocoa, Wes began hauling boxes of lights up from the basement to the driveway, where he laid them out and checked circuits. No one on Hemlock strung more Christmas lights than the Trogdons. They lined their yard, wrapped their shrubs, draped their trees, outlined their house, adorned their windows. 14,000 lights the year before. Frohmeyer left work early so he could supervise matters on Hemlock and was quite pleased to see activity. He was momentarily jealous that Trogdon had beaten him to the punch, but what did it really matter? Before long, they joined forces in the driveway of Mrs. Ellen Mulholland, a lovely widow who was already baking brownies. Her frosty was up in a flash, her brownies devoured, and they were off to render more assistance. Kids joined them, including Spike Frohmeyer, a 12-year-old with his father's flair for organization and community activism, and they went door to door in the late afternoon, hurrying before darkness slowed them. At the Cranks, Spike rang the doorbell but got no response. Mr. Crank's Lexus was not there, which was certainly not unusual at 5 p.m., but Mrs. Crank's Audi was in the garage, a sure sign that she was home. The curtains and shades were pulled. No answer at the door, though, and the gang moved to the Beckers, where Ned was in the front yard washing his frosty with his mother-in-law barking instructions from the steps. "They're leaving now," Nora whispered into the phone in their bedroom. "Why are you whispering?" Luther asked with agitation. "Because I don't want them to hear me." "Who is it?" "Vic Frohmeyer, Wes Trogdon, looks like that Brixley fellow from the other end of the street, some kids." "A regular bunch of thugs, huh?" "More like a street gang. They're at the Beckers now."
"God help them."
"Where's Frosty?" she asked.
"Same place he's been since January." "Why?"
"Oh, I don't know. This is comical, Nora. You're whispering into the phone in a locked house because our neighbors are going door to door helping our other neighbors put up a ridiculous 7-foot plastic snowman, which, by the way, has absolutely nothing to do with Christmas. Ever think about that, Nora?"
"No."
"We voted for Rudolph, remember?"
"No, it's comical. I'm not laughing. Frosty's taking a year off, okay? The answer is no."
Luther hung up gently and tried to concentrate on his work. After dark, he drove home, slowly, all the way telling himself that it was silly to be worried about such trivial matters as putting a snowman on the roof. And all the way, he kept thinking of Walt Scheel.
"Come on, Scheel," he mumbled to himself. "Don't let me down."
Walt Scheel was his rival on Hemlock, a grumpy sort who lived directly across the street. 2 kids out of college, a wife battling breast cancer, a mysterious job with a Belgian conglom, an income that appeared to be in the upper range on Hemlock. But regardless of what he earned, Scheel and the missus expected their neighbors to think they had a lot more. Luther bought a Lexus. Scheel had to have one. Bellington put in a pool. Scheel suddenly needed to swim in his own backyard, doctor's orders. Sue Kropp on the West End outfitted her kitchen with designer appliances. $8,000 was the rumor.
and Bev Scheel spent $9,000 6 months later. A hopeless cook, Bev's cuisine tasted worse after the renovation, according to witnesses. Their haughtiness had been stopped cold, however, with the breast cancer 18 months earlier. The Shields had been humbled mightily. Keeping ahead of the neighbors didn't matter anymore. Things were useless. They had endured the disease with a quiet dignity, and, as usual, Hemlock had supported them like family. A year after the first chemo, the Belgian conglom had reshuffled itself. Whatever Walt's job had been, it was now something less.